Morning. It's the Medicine Ball Caravan here on KRVS, Lafayette Lake Charles. I'm Cecil Doyle. And once again, it's another Monday here with sad news of losing another friend and artist so important to this region. Over the weekend, we lost Courtney Granger, another reliable presence in all of our lives. If you live here in Southwest Louisiana, been Cajun and roots music has been part of your life. We'll be spending some time with Brother Deej a little bit later on, talking about his new book, soundtrack, recent adventures. That's all coming up, but we are going to begin the hour with a few selections from our good friend Courtney Granger. From his 2016 Valcor Records release, Beneath Still Waters, we begin with the title track.
Beneath Still Waters, there's a strong undertow. The surface won't tell you what the deep water knows. Darling, I'm saying that I know something's wrong beneath still water. Love is gone. Even a fool could see that you'll soon be leaving me. But each and every heart must share its turn at misery. This time it's me. I'll cry along beneath still water. Your love is time it's me, and I'll cry along beneath still water. Your love is gone beneath still water. Your love is gone.
Donner la fierté. toi et tu tes frères, ils ont donné de belles chansons. Et avec toute la famille, beaucoup d'inspiration. Avec des larmes dans tes yeux, d'un vrai joueur dans violon. T'as chanté avec tout ton cœur, de misère, de vieux. On va toujours la garder.
Full of disease,
Physicians and doctors couldn't bring them much ease. They suffered till death brought a final release. What are they doing there now? Oh, what are they doing in heaven today, where sin and sorrow are all done away? Peace abounds like a river, they say. But what are they doing there now? Oh, what are they doing there now?
Sleep well, my brother. That's Courtney Granger, who we lost this weekend, from his Valcor Records release from 2016, Beneath Still Waters. And number, What Are They Doing in Heaven Today? Before that, from his 1999 Rounder Records release produced by Dirk Powell, Un Bol Che Bol Fa, and featuring Steve Riley on accordion, of course, some fine fiddling from Courtney and vocals on Merci Monk Dewey. Of course, he is the nephew of the legendary Dewey Balfa. And Courtney beginning the program title track to Beneath Still Waters, his 2016 Valcor Records country release. Here on the Medicine Ball Caravan on KRVS, missing Courtney Granger, as we know many in the area have. We've lost so many musical friends over the last weeks and months and last year. It's hard to keep track. When we get together, you know, someone's going to be missing, and you realize that they're gone. And that's the sort of the truly sad thing about this time that we're living in. You're listening to KRVS, Lafayette Lake Charles, the Medicine Ball Caravan. Brother Deej, we've got him in the studio. And talk to him about some of his recent things, what he's been doing during this pandemic. Haven't had a visit from Brother Deej in a while. But we're going to start off with this track from his guest breakthrough solo release from Folk Songs of the American Long Hair.
Ten long years, ten more. One right in jail, gone, let me go, son. Save your prayers, cry no more. They ain't gonna yell none. Could be the way it was, could be the way it was, could be the way it was done. Could be a hard road song. your heart will grow.
It's always a hard row to hoe. Grammy-nominated Brother Deej, still on the best-kept secrets of Louisiana, so I've read in a description. A musician, writer, Louisiana Press Award 2004-2008, outsider artist. Wow, you're in the same legion as Jandek now. And heir to a long line of enigmatic characters birthed in the slaughterhouses of the Deep South. Will you welcome Brother Deej?
Hi, hi. What's up, Sir Cecil?
Long time no see, buddy. You always got something going on.
I got to stay busy, man.
Well, you know, we haven't spoken since I think this whole pandemic thing has been going on. That's been a year and a half or, yeah, you know, a couple of years almost, or creeping up on 2 years that that's been in effect. So we haven't seen you since then. Obviously, you didn't just sit on your rump during the whole downtime. You've been keeping busy.
I had one of the greatest years of my life, Cecil. I know a lot of musicians were complaining, you know, not getting to play live and stuff like that. I got lucky in that I'd already scheduled 2020 off to make a record, aside from a handful of festival dates, which all got canceled. But I was kind of given this bubble, anti-light gravity bubble, to make the next record in. And there was no fear of missing out. There was no distractions, you know, because everybody was home kind of staying in place. So I just went every day to my studio space and got to make a couple records, an audio book, and some other stuff, work on other people's music. And just, I got so many creative projects done. It was great. And that's my favorite thing to do is just write songs and, the creative process is where I get my yayas out, you know, not so much on the stage. That's fun, but I don't consider myself like a natural born performer guy. So I really, like, the gods gave me a good gift, and I just had all this time and space to get a bunch of stuff done, man. So it was probably the biggest creative wave of my life thus far. And I rode that thing all the way into the sand. I got bumped and knocked around, but it was, it's been pretty fun.
Well, yeah, and it definitely looks like it's paid off. I mean, first you already had the book thing going on, I guess.
Correct. Cablogged the book. It was already scheduled to come out around the time that the pandemic occurred, so we just delayed it a little bit to kind of let people settle in, because at the beginning of the pandemic, nobody wanted to – everybody's so freaked out, you know.
Now, before we get deeper into that, tell us a little bit about Cablog. Cablog is, of course, your latest book from the UL Press. Tell us about it, how this came about.
Okay, Cablog is a nonfiction book. It's a document of my 5 years driving a taxi cab on the night shift in Lafayette, Louisiana, roughly from 2003 to 2008. And I kept notes through the whole time, and by the time the job was over, I had an 800-page Word file that over the next 10 years, I mean, it took me 10 years to finish it, like not necessarily write it, but cut all the fat off and the stuff that didn't age well. So I whittled it down to about 250 pages and got it lean and mean. And luckily, UL decided they wanted to put it out and publish it. So it's been fun. It's like it's a wild ride. It goes up, goes down. It's got the typical shenanigans and hijinks that you would associate with like nighttime, night shift cab driving. But there's also, you know, some more deeper, quieter moments.
Yes, there certainly are. And the thing about it, I love the way the book is written. It's just a bunch of little short episodes. And I mean, most of them are really short. Yeah. And it's great. It's to me, it's almost like a film. You know, it just kind of runs in. You have these little sequences that kind of come in and fade out. And, you know, there's so much you would think, like, okay, a guy's writing about his cab experiences. Yeah, you know there's going to be some odd clientele. You know there's going to be some probably crazy things that happen. But there's also a lot of just touches of humanity in the whole thing. I mean, yeah, you have some really touching stories about like the story about you dropping the guy off at the hospital that was hurt, you know, and you see him and you know, the look of fear on his face
as
you were leaving him. There's tons of stories like that. So a lot of this skill to be able to put this together. Well, you wrote for local paper for many years, so you had a
background in it.
Right.
And I'd been writing. I've done both the writing and the music parallel to one another since I started both of them. I've just kind of pushed them along. I get a little bored with one, and I go work on I get tired of the music or just kind of burn out, and I go do the other. And I like to do them both equally. It's like water skiing and skydiving, I guess. But yeah, what you mentioned about the book is it could have easily been just a shotgun blast of just kooky stories and drunk people. And there was a lot of that. Honestly, that's what I had to cut out of the book. There was so much redundancy of just drunk people doing stupid stuff.
Right.
So I kept the kind of the best versions of those stories. And then also I wanted to, it's just like life. There's authentic interaction with people where you're not expecting to maybe see a glimpse of another human soul, which happens occasionally. I kind of riff on this in the book a lot, a few times where, you know, we're all stuck in our own bubble, but occasionally that window pops open for about 5 minutes and you actually see the silhouette of the soul of another human being and you feel what they're feeling. And then the window closes and you're gone and you're on to the next thing. But it's really cool. I mean, that's what I kind of live for, and it makes me feel most at home when I'm connected to other people on the planet and in my local community, you know, in that way. And it's hard to stay, I guess, in that enlightened state. And I talk about that too, because there's many instances in the book where I'm not enlightened, you know.
Right. So this comes out. I see you just briefly. Basically, you brought me a copy of the book, you know, when it was out. Thanking you for that. And but when you're there, you know, we kind of talk about, you know, the possibility of doing, you know, man, what if there was a, what if this was either an audio book or a soundtrack or something? And, you know, lo and behold, that kind of materializes in form.
Yeah, good point. I had no intention of doing an audio book. I didn't even think about it. But around the time that the book was published in November 2020, I did a podcast, and who is another writer that hosted it from Texas. And he suggested to me, are you going to do an audiobook? He'd published 5-6 books. And I was like, is that kind of, does everybody do that now? And he goes, yeah, it's a common thing. And so I was like, well, you know, I have all this recording gear at my place. I don't see why I wouldn't do it. So the next few days later, I started cracking down on the actual audiobook version of the book, of the catalog book. And I even downloaded some other people's audiobooks to kind of research what they're like. And I found them, not to offend anybody, but I found them kind of boring. It's just quiet. They're just reading the book, and some of it's good version of the reading, and some of it's just a little boring. And I'm a musician, you know. I like everything from punk rock to old school country music, and I like a lot of noise too. So I was like, why don't I make this like an audio movie where there are cinematic sounds creeping in and out of me reading the text. And once I got on that groove and figured out the angle to kind of execute the audiobook, and it took a little pulling of muscles, it was a blast. It was one of the funnest things I'd ever done, because I'd never done it before. It's like making my first record and diving into the whole thing of it.
Yeah, we're hearing it a little bit of it in the background. So who did you get other folks to work with you on this as far as the music goes? Who was involved in the production of this?
Here's another thing that happened. I started betting that the audiobook with little pieces of original music, sound design, slide guitar, mostly ambient music. And by the end of completing the audiobook, I was like, man, this music's kind of cool. And I revisited the different pieces I'd made, and I think there was about 50 or 60 of them. And then I was like, you know what? I think I got a record here of just instrumental kind of meditation music or something, which I like. I'm a big fan of like binaural beats and all these things. So I fleshed those out into an actual score / soundtrack for the audiobook. So it was just another project to keep me busy, and I loved doing it. It was almost funner than making the record that I also completed during the pandemic too.
All right. Well, I say we just listened to a little bit of it. We're going to come back in just a minute. We're going to listen to some Brother Deej go to his Farmer's Almanac album that came out, two, 3 years ago now. We're going to listen to a track called The Shakedown, and we're going to talk a little bit more about the Cablog book and audio companion here on the Medicine Ball Caravan, KRVS. Shakedown going down as Brother Deej Leg from Farmer's Almanac here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. We have Brother Deej with us in the studio, and we've been talking about last few minutes about Cablog, his recent book chronicling his years driving a cab here in Lafayette, and the accompanying soundtrack,
something like that.
Yeah. You know, while the song was going on, I said, yeah, Deej, why don't you read something from the book? It's like, you know, for every time, and the good thing about this, when I read it, I hear your voice, so it'll be great to actually hear your voice for a change. So what you got lined up for us, man?
Well, we can do Motel City or Heartstrings. Let's try Heartstrings.
All right.
Heartstrings. I'm parked in the ghetto waiting for the next call when I see a homeless man sitting on a curb across the street. He's just sitting there sipping from a beer in a bag. He's oblivious to everyone. I watch him for a few minutes, just staring at him. Then all of a sudden I feel a string section in my heart swell. And I see the decades of pain ripple across his face. And I get a distant sense of the huge sadness that has probably plagued him for his entire life. It's like a symphony of sadness that has spat him out here onto this curb where I watch him. You know, the heart's a funny thing. It sneaks up on you when we aren't ready for it.
Nah, we aren't ready for it ever. Brother Deej. So, yeah, man. That's great that this book thing happened during last year and actually through this year for the most part. I mean, you were working on a lot of that this year. So
totally.
Here in 2021, all of this kind of comes into fruition. And you've been keeping busy. For those of us who don't get to tour, as we were talking about earlier, I imagine it's tough getting a gig. You get something and it gets canceled. You know, you have anything, any places you played this year that
we did not do any gigs for the past 18 months until about a month ago. We had one festival gig in Switzerland, and it was a festival gig that they sought us out through our booking agency over there and booked us to play. We didn't think it was going to happen. It was booked in January of like 2021. And we agreed to it, confirmed, and just thinking it would get canceled. But as we got closer, we're like, man, we might be doing this thing. And sure enough, a month out, we were like, okay, let's start making plans to get tested and COVID testing and all that stuff to get over there. And we ended up doing it. It was a hassle, not as much as I thought it would be, but we made it there, got to the place. People were beautiful. Weather's great. Played the gig. Honestly, probably one of the top 10 gigs we've ever played, having not played in a year and a half. And it was a blast. And we came home, but one guy tested positive on the way back. So my deal with the guys was, hey, if anybody tests positive, I'll stay behind and get us two hotel rooms. You'll quarantine. And that's what we did. I actually got and he wasn't that sick. He was just mildly feverish and, you know. So it all worked out. And I got an extra week in Switzerland just bouncing around.
Yeah. And I guess, you know, that's obviously he had to have gotten vaccinated. So it shows that the vaccination at least will keep you from getting.
He was vaccinated and he only had like one or two days where he felt kind of crappy.
Yeah. Well, like I said, another good testament to that whole thing. So, that's amazing. So was that your first time in Switzerland or have you been there?
No,
before?
We've been there numerous times.
Really? Really?
Yeah. There's a little a following there for the music. And like, obviously these people that run this festival, they booked us to headline it. So they were, you know, I don't know how it makes it out there, Cecil, what I do. I've been doing it for so dang long. And, you know, many years ago, over a decade ago, I came to the conclusion, like, you know, this might never be that popular, Deej. You might just be working labor jobs for the rest of your life and doing your hobby on the side. And slowly my little choo-choo train has just been kind of creeping up the mountain really slowly. So it's man, I'm so grateful and I feel so lucky to be able to do this and do it in the way that I want to do it, because honestly, I don't think I'm technically musically sophisticated enough to create music that's popular or to adapt to whatever's happening trend-wise and, you know, in the music industry. So I just do what I do, and it's actually been a blessing that I've just done my own little thing.
Yeah, and you know, that way you find the listeners. You don't compromise. You just do your thing, and you know that's what pulls in the right people.
Yeah,
may not pull in tons of people, but it'll pull in the right people.
Correct. It's totally grassroots. It's, you know, aside from having a few famous people that have, you know, used my music in movies or something like that, it's been a totally grassroots thing, and it's sustaining itself. So yeah, like I feel totally lucky, and you know, I got a great group of guys that are playing with me, that the band and stuff, and who also played on the soundtrack score, Greg and Kent, who, you know, on the Cablog audiobook score has like so many field recordings and stuff of just on tour. Like we're hearing church bells ringing down the road, so I'd record that on my phone, and you know, or Greg at soundtrack playing kind of jazzy interludes, and I stuffed all that stuff in the audiobook. It really is it's a smorgasbord of just field recordings, original score, and other weirdness.
Well, yeah. Well, you're lucky to do that. That's the great place to play. I've always wanted to go to Switzerland. I think I told you the story that it seems over the past year, or definitely this year, you know, I spend Saturday nights, we watch videos, driving videos in Switzerland. I think I've driven the entire country.
Oh, just like moving around in the Alps and the roads?
Driving videos. There are two or three people that I subscribe to on YouTube that are basically every weekend they go on, they take drives, long drives out in these beautiful road trips, go up mountains, go up passes, a lot of passes, you know.
Yeah.
And you just experience the thing in real time, and you know, they're great quality. They're shot in 4K. You sit there, you got the rumbling of the car. I mean, you know,
you're there, buddy.
I literally watch that for about 3 hours every Saturday night. That's been my entertainment, taking driving, watching driving videos.
That's your meditation, yeah.
And totally relaxing. I mean, it puts my, it lowers the blood pressure.
Yeah.
Just the scenery. I mean, I don't see how you can go there and just like just not be flabbergasted, because to see it in actuality instead of just on a flat screen. I mean,
I find that country, like when we go over there, it's really relaxed. Like people are chill. We hang out by the river that runs through the middle of Zurich, and we just hang out all day and kind of sip beers, and people are talk at a quiet, moderate volume. There's no obnoxious music blasting as you hear in public places in the United States.
It's against the law, I think, there. I mean, or
I don't even know. But
I've been hearing that they're very strict on noise, which I like that. I mean, you know, instead of enforcing your music on everyone else.
Totally agree. If that's the case, it's effective, because I found that when we're in public spaces, everybody's just chill. There's no they're just having quiet, long conversations in a really idyllic setting along the river and the cafes and the beer gardens and stuff. It's incredible.
Yeah, as compared to here where everybody's kind of like, look at
we're
me.
We're all knuckleheads,
yeah,
man.
Look
yeah,
at me.
Yeah, yeah. And you have to like foist your obnoxiousness on everyone and like, I'm here now, bro-dozers and such. And I know it's like America's a great country, but we're loud, man.
Yeah.
You know?
Anyway, we're talking to Brother Deej about all kinds of things here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. You mentioned just a few minutes ago, I have to touch back on that because it's been a while since we've spoken that. You were mentioning like other people who have used your music, so I guess on top of the list, we can't forget Quentin Tarantino using it for Django Unchained. Just to briefly go back, you know, on that story, how did that happen? How did you what was that phone call like, or how did you hear about it?
It happened in the most natural way that it should happen, in my opinion, which is he just found it on his own. There was no connections. I don't know anybody that knows him, no brother-in-laws or anybody that works for him. It was just he was driving home from the editing room one night and heard it on Sirius satellite radio, and then it struck him, and I guess he went and looked it up and got his music supervisor to contact me or email me. And I get emails like not like that every week, but I get little ones from people, you know, just wanting to do their little student films, which is fine.
Uh-huh.
But so I didn't email her right back right away. And it took a few days. She actually called me at work at the men's shelter when I was working there. And she goes, did you check your email yet? And I was like, who's this? She was like, oh, you know, this is from such and such. I was like, no, I didn't. She goes, well, you should read that email because it's got some important stuff in it. So I read the email to her while I was on the phone with her, and I was like, blah, 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 blah. Oh, Quentin Tarantino. What? Oh, okay. So you're serious.
So it happens just like that. From what I understand, I think he heard it just probably from I don't know if you told me this, or I think actually I may have read it or heard it in an interview. I think I heard it in an interview when the film was originally out. Yeah, they were shooting the scene that, you know, with the horse running. When he got back in, he heard the song and figured, like, that's the song I would need for the scene we just shot.
It's in a good scene, you know. It's like Quentin's like my radio station, you know. I don't get played on commercial radio for the most part. I don't have the infrastructure and the hype machine behind me and whatnot. But that movie plays on Netflix. It plays on airplanes. Oh. It's on cable TV. It's all over the place. And that song just pops up like a little radio station tune, and people still discovering it.
The moment I first heard that, the moment you told me that, I just said, "Wow!" I mean, that's it. You're immortal now. Those films are huge. Everyone knows them now. They're going to be known for decades. As long as the civilization can manage to survive, you know. So it's like, and the fact that he's planning on only doing 10 films, only one more, you know, that film will be known forever. So it's like, you know, you're part of something that's going to live in immortality, man.
Yeah.
And that's in itself is something few of us can say.
I'm totally grateful, Cecil, you know, and I've paid a lot of dues over the years where there was a lot of ups and downs and lows and valleys, and I mean a lot of them. But once in a while I get lucky, buddy.
Yeah.
That's a good example.
All right. Here it is. Too old to die young.
Above or below the ground.
Too Old to Die Young Now. That's Brother Deej, a track that made it on the way to the Quentin Tarantino film Django Unchained. And we've got Brother Deej here on the caravan. So, yeah, you were talking about during this downtime, you must have written some songs. Any plans for a record in the somewhat foreseeable future, man?
Or? Yeah, that was the first thing. That was my main priority over the course of the pandemic, was to get the next record done, which turned out great. Like, it's in the can. Like, it's mastered.
Oh, that we're that far into it.
It's done, buddy. Artwork is almost done. So I think we're looking at a spring 2022 release if things don't get kooky, you know, worldwide or whatever the hell's going on.
So. That I wasn't expecting. So, well, I'm thrilled. You know, I tend to spin a lot of those records here on the caravan.
Which
so.
I really appreciate.
when it's good music, how can I not? You know, basically the secret is if you can make songs that stay in my head, when I'm putting shows together, those songs pop up. When I play a song, it's like I always hear the next song that should be there. And so... That's all part of the formula, I guess. How'd you bring your guitar in this morning? Just cause, why not? I know it's early in the day to be.
I'm not singing that great, buddy. To be honest with you, not like it's ever that great, but it's
yeah,
all good.
Yeah, as I say, I know it's early in the morning, but just to kind of have a little live element.
You want
to
try one
thing?
Of these new ones? I might mess it up.
I would love that. We'd love the little debut of something here.
Let me see if I can plow through it. I've been working on a Skip James song called Hard Time Killing Floor. And I just do my own little version of it. I can't sing it all high and falsetto, but it's pretty moody.
Let's go with it.
Hard times here, nowhere you go. Times is hard. Thank you.
There you go. Brother Deej covering that Hard Time Killing Floor here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. Man, brother, it's been so good catching up with you after all this time. Don't get to spend too many minutes talking to people, you know, this past year.
Zip people.
So, yeah, it's good to kind of catch up with you, man.
You too, brother. I really appreciate everything you do. KRVS is honestly one of the greatest stations on the planet. Your show's killer. I've told you this before. Like, I listen to your show and I hear stuff on there I've never heard before. It's always turning me on to new things, which is rare these days. Everybody's heard everything. So you're doing a good job.
Well, thanks.
Be proud of yourself.
Just trying to play what's new and kind of drag back what I like.
You kids with your hipster records and coolness.
Yeah, there you go. So anyway, thanks so much for catching up with us. We're going to go out of the segment with a track you did with Santa Rhea, a great tune. And this kind of shows, you know, this kind of displays what you were doing ended up doing on your solo records. I mean, just these great you have a gift for these kind of great chord changes, and just, you know, it's sort of like it's the changes in the melodies that you do that have your own signature on them.
Thanks, brother.
And I think that I really saw it begin with this song called "Your Right Thing Can't Go Wrong." Brother Deej, thanks for dropping by, man.
Thank you, Sir Cecil.
3, 4.
Can't go wrong.
That's Brother Deej with a little help from Roddy Romero on slide guitar, Steve Riley on accordion, My Right Thing Can't Go Wrong, a Santeria track here on the Medicine Ball Caravan. Thanks to Brother Deej for the drop by. Stay tuned. Harpistry is up next at 12 noon with Valerie Green. At 1 o'clock, The Flip Side with James Van Way. Medicine Ball Caravan, produced live in Cypress Lake Studios here on the campus of the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, who join you in support of this station. I'm Cecil Doyle. Thanks for tuning in. We'll do it again tomorrow.